Yeah, that's right. He's a motherfucking G. Yeah.
Welcome back to the Bruce Allen Show, A Dad's Point of View. I'm Bruce Allen, and you can email me at bruce@brucesallan.com. That's Bruce and Sallan, S-A-L-L-A-N.com. That's S like in Sam's, Pastor Drew Sams, who is my next guest and my longest-running regular guest for Spiritual Talk. Pastor Drew Sams is a pastor at Calvary Community Church in Westlake Village, California. He's the proud parent of baby Andrew, and he is married to a beautiful wife and lives in Westlake Village, California. Welcome back to the show, Pastor Drew.
Hey, Bruce. Thanks for having me on again.
Well, I love it, and let's start with our usual health and welfare update on baby Judah Andrew.
Oh, I love it. Well, I love giving these updates. You know, sadly, this week, I can share with you, this is the first week he's actually had his first injury. It was probably harder for us as parents to watch. He's totally fine. I don't want to scare you. But he's so much fun. So much energy. He was chasing me around the house. I'm walking. Came home on a lunch break to see him, and he tripped over the back of my ankles, you know, just as I was walking. And he fell head first right into the corner where two walls come together. Got this huge knot and shiner right above his eyebrow. And I think when my wife saw him and flipped out at the sight of it, he then got more scared than he really was. And so we had to calm him down.
That's so funny.
He was crying at first, but then when he saw her face, he thought, what's wrong? What's wrong? But he's doing great.
That's good. But it was all your fault, I gather.
It was. Sure was. Like a soccer player tackling him.
Yeah, really. I mean, I can see how a mom might have been looking at you with a little askance, as they say.
Yeah, the look was, what did you do?
Yeah, that's so funny. I mean, basically, that's kind of how my wife, when anything goes wrong, she first looks to me, and it's like, it's my fault.
But he's doing great, growing healthy and strong, lots of fun.
Well, happy to hear that, and glad it was only a minor mishap. So, you and I are Southern California born and raised. So actually, my column of the week about cars is relevant to us, as it may not be to a lot of listeners in other parts of the country and certainly in other parts of the world. But you were telling me on the break that you have your own car story and how for us, identity and the kids that you minister to now, sometimes the identity of a young teen can really be wrapped up in their choice of car.
Oh, yeah. Boy, I remember as a kid, you know, the hot car was either the old muscle cars, you know, the old Corvettes, the Camaros, the Mustangs, or it was like the new BMWs or the Mercedes, or even some of the, you know, the cool trucks, the raised trucks with the big tires. And when I was entering that age, when I was, you know, getting my license and all that, and I was hoping that my parents would buy me a car, of course, they weren't going to just drop all that money. And they said, you know, Drew, you're going to have to work for it. You're going to have to save up the money. It was like a teenage boy's worst nightmare come true. And so I saved up. I think it was like,
excuse me, the teenage boy's best lesson probably as a result of
true.
That. Unlike a lot of the kids today at my son's high school, where my son said he wants my wife's car when we move, because we may be moving in a couple years, and my wife drives a Mercedes. And the reason he wants the car is most of his classmates have that Mercedes.
Yeah, so this is going to...
Hello?
Things haven't changed at all. I think, especially for guys, that you know, our identity is wrapped up in the cars we drive. And so with me, $1,500 in my pocket, which was tons of money for me back then, all I could afford, ready for this?
Okay.
Was a 1984 Volvo.
Oh.
You know, and for those, everybody knows what those old Volvos look like. They're the ones that you drew, you know, when you were in kindergarten. It's all straight angles drawn the car.
Oh, God.
And so I remember.
That's a buzzkill. Your social life, I mean, it's a good thing you're a good-looking dude. I mean, I'm telling you, your social life really would have ended right then and there.
Well, it did, in fact, because I drove to campus. I think it was like a Monday. I was so excited, got it washed up, and, you know, the inside and outside, it was looking great. Had my music playing, pulled into campus. I got there early. Nobody saw me pull in, but I remember coming out on my lunch break to meet my friends to show them, and there was a group of guys going out to their cars, and I overheard them saying about my car, look at that car, my grandma drives that car. And I was so embarrassed. I literally kind of just walked past my car, literally, and kind of just went through the parking lot and then just stayed on lunch for campus. And no joke, for the next few months, I would park my car down the street and walk
to hide your car.
To hide my car. Because it's so sad looking back that I wrapped up my identity. And
well,
I was so embarrassed.
What's very interesting, you may not have heard our first segment today, but we had the founders of an organization called SafeLaunch.org, which is about educating and preventing teens from getting involved in addiction. And they said the most effective communication they've learned on anything is peer-to-peer. And in essence, they were you're talking about peer pressure. You are a self-confident guy on every level, yet, and I can't imagine you weren't in high school. Not to mention, joking aside, you are good-looking and personable and bright and all the other things as well. So for you to be that affected by what a couple guys say is really reflective of how teenagers are and how much they're influenced by each other. You were telling me also on break that you recently had a discussion about identity with a group of your congregants that are teens. Was that correct?
Yeah, you know, that's a topic that I think is so foundational to who we are, not only as teenagers, but as humans. You know, the question, who am I? Well, I mean, there's no more question, I think, that is more profound and more foundational to our life experience. In fact, I'm actually going this weekend to speak at a camp mm-hmm. for incoming freshman high school kids on the topic of identity. And one of the things that I often go back to, sociologists have found that we typically answer that question, who am I, one of three ways. And I'd love for you to even think about this in relation to some of the topics we've covered over the last few years. But the three are, I am what I do, or I am what I own, or I am what others say about me. You know, so you introduce yourself at a, you know, at a cocktail party, and you're like, you know, I'm a radio personality. I've got a top blog, tons of followers. You know, I've got a couple of e-books and things like that. You know, some people might say, oh, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer.
The thing that's so interesting about that is the first thing we tend to ask each other, especially the guys, is hi, I'm Drew. Hi, I'm Bruce. Oh, what do you do, Drew?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's actually Pastor Drew, and I'm a minister at Calvary. Oh, really? What do you do, Bruce? Well, you know, I'm blah, blah, blah. That's what we do. And I think guys do that more than women as far as the first thing out of our mouth is, what do you do?
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. And then
I like that third thing, though. What do other people say about
you? Yeah.
That's interesting.
So I think a lot of times what we do, at least I can speak from personal experience, is, you know, I like to have a good reputation. I don't like it when people think I'm a flake or I'm late or I'm unreliable. And so I'll do anything possible to have that positive reputation. The tough thing is when there's people who really don't know me that well, who will say something that, whether it's out of jealousy or out of whatever it might be, their own personal gain. I used to get so wrapped up in what other people thought about me, even if I didn't really even care about it.
You're talking about, of course, when you're much younger, and that's exactly what we're talking about, teenagers.
Yeah. But even sometimes now, you know, somebody will make a comment. Somebody said a year ago, you know, Drew, you know, you don't really have what it takes to be a senior pastor.
I can't believe anybody would say that.
I know.
That has actually heard you speak.
Yeah, well, and I didn't even know him that well. And I think, who knows what the motivation was for that, but that stung.
I can tell you right now, jealousy.
Yeah. So, but in the moment, it's amazing how much that impacted me. And so I've really had to remind myself that my identity isn't in either what I do or what I own or what others say about me. But ultimately, for me, it's who God says I am. And no matter what, whether I lose my job or have it, no matter I lose a car or whatever car I have, no matter my reputation, I have that foundation. And then hopefully everything else just adds on top of that, flows from that.
I couldn't agree more. I hope my legacy is the good works I've left behind. It's certainly not going to be the possessions I leave behind. It's one of the reasons I believe very strongly that parents should consider a living will for their kids, which is basically giving them some guidance, so to speak, of how to live life that you can write and give them either in literally writing or in the form of a video upon your demise. That is a legacy of a way to live life that you hopefully have taught them and exemplified. I think that's so much more important than just leaving them money. It's leaving them values and having raised them a certain way.
Yeah, boy, I love that. You know, you've brought that up in the past, that living will is so rare, but how powerful that could be for that next generation.
We're out of time. I want to put you on the spot and ask for just one line from scriptures that you think speaks to what we've talked about, if you got it, and also where people can find you.
Yeah, great. You know, there's a part in Ephesians 2:10 that says, don't you know that you are God's masterpiece? You know, that's a word that we don't often say when we look in the mirror and say, you know, to ourselves, because I think we get wrapped up in the lies that the world says. Oh, you haven't made it. You're not enough. You're not good enough. You're not smart enough, tall enough, whatever it might be. But what a reminder that we are God's masterpiece.
Beautiful.
Hand-created. So on all social networks, at Surfer Drew, and not yet blogging.
Okay.
Sam's.com.
Pastor Drew, great to speak with you. Talk to you next week. We'll be back with Dr. Weberman for Therapy Talks.
That's where he went to UCLA, got his MBA, produced his first film at age 24. That's when he really started to score. Vice president of ABC, yeah, that's right. He's a motherfucking G, yeah.